radio@firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters.
Welcome to Radio at Firehouse.com. This is the Leader's Toolbox with your host, Dr. Richard Gassaway. Rich, welcome again this month. I know we'll be seeing you down at Firehouse Expo here in a couple weeks. What else do you have going on over the summer?
Well, it's shaping up to be a pretty busy summer, Pete. In addition to Firehouse Expo, which is one of my favorite conferences to attend, it really meets some top-notch leaders in the fire service and some up-and-comers. I really enjoy the Expo experience. On July 10th and 11th, I'm going to be at Oklahoma State University. They're having the International Fire Service Journal Leadership and Management Research Symposium, and I'm presenting some research there to the attendees at that conference. And then August 6th to 8th, I'm going to be at the Louisiana Firemen's Association Conference in New Orleans, and I appreciate them inviting me down and give me an opportunity to talk with them about firefighter safety. August the 15th, I'm going to be at the Springdale Township Fire Department in Harwich, Pennsylvania. I have some friends that I have made over the years there with Chief Manning and Assistant Chief Funkhauser at the Springdale Township. I've presented to them a few times, and they're inviting me back to do a program for them. It'll be open enrollment. If you're in the Pittsburgh area, you might reach out to their website. I don't have it, but maybe we can link it, and maybe we'll see you at Springdale Township. August 17th, I'm going to be at the Carroll County Volunteer Fire Department in Carrollton, Ohio, doing an evening program, which is going to be an evening program and a barbecue. So if you're in the Carroll County area of the Carrollton area of Ohio, you might want to reach out to them and get registered for that program, because it's going to be a fun evening of learning and fellowship. And then August 25th to 29th, Fire Rescue International in Dallas, which I'm also very much looking forward to. Dallas a little hot in August, but it's a great conference.
At least it's a dry heat. It's not there's no humidity down there, so that makes it
exactly,
easy.
Exactly.
All right. Well, we'll put a link to your website, and your calendar of events can be seen on there as well. So for those listening, you can check out the podcast player page at radio.firehouse.com. And if you do have any questions for Rich, you can send them to podcast@firehouse.com, and we'll get to those in a future show. Rich, we can get into the questions here, and we can talk about Firehouse Expo a little bit when we come back from the break. The first question I have for you is, our department was forced to reduce our staffing through early retirements and layoffs. In the process, our department lost some very good firefighters, and I lost some very good friends. This has left me feeling confused, angry, and bitter toward our city administration and toward our chief, though I don't think he had much to say in the process. I guess I'm looking for someone to blame, and he's my target by default. Anyhow, I find myself very unhappy and motivated in my job that just a couple of months ago I absolutely loved. Is there anything wrong with me, and how can I get over this?
You know, when I saw this question, Pete, as I have traveled around and spoken with firefighters, I think this is something that is happening frequently. And I think the feelings that this person displayed is something that many firefighters and officers and chiefs are feeling now, because the fire service has certainly taken a hit in this economic downturn. I had seen recently one statistic that said that as many as 5,000 firefighter jobs have been impacted changes as a result of the economy. So I think that this person, although I don't know that it makes him feel any better to say that you're not alone, there are a lot of people who are in that boat and having those feelings. And I think what is happening in this situation is that you're this firefighter is feeling loss, the same kind of loss that you would feel if you had someone die that was close to you, or if you ended a long-term relationship that you had with somebody, or if you had a friend that was maybe a good friend that moved away. All of this results in loss and a process of grieving the loss of the person. You know, when someone's going to retire and you know they're going to retire and it's been planned and it's been talked about, that can come a little easier to accept and digest because you knew that it was coming. It's the sudden loss, the layoff or the forced retirement, or if someone were to abruptly quit and move away, or say get killed, line of duty or not, it's that abruptness that leaves people, I think, feeling confused and angry and bitter, and this process is a grieving process. And what he's describing is he's mourning the loss of his friends and his work associates. And it sounds like he had a great relationship with them, and that all the wheels were turning well, and all the cylinders were firing off, and they were really enjoying their work and feeling productive and feeling as though they were making a difference in people's lives. And then it gets yanked out from underneath them for reasons that they can't control. They can't stop it, and that makes them even more angry because they know that they're helpless. For this firefighter and anyone who's going through this, I'm certainly not a grief counselor. I have had some training and read some on the topic. So what I'm sharing here is more things that I have learned, more than from my own lived experiences and expertise. But I think the process of mourning is what this firefighter is going to be going through. It's natural to grieve the loss of his friends and his coworkers. He's hurting physically, emotionally, spiritually. He probably feels as though there's some void in his life. That used to be something that he looked forward to, and now maybe doesn't so look forward to coming to work. Maybe he feels guilty that that they were impacted and he wasn't. I remember after September 11th that some of the firefighters who survived that horrific tragedy said that they felt guilty that they were not among those who died. And they were struggling with that that emotion, that they should have died with their brothers and instead of surviving. And they were struggling to try to find sense of how it was that they were spared, and really felt bitter and angry and confused about that. And I don't want to necessarily draw the parallel of that event to what's going on here, but that separation from those who mean a lot to you does impact you. And I think that there are often, when someone has this happen, goes through a grieving process. And that grieving process has essentially three rather distinct and oftentimes overlapping phases as to how you recover from this loss or work your way through this grieving. As you go through each phase of this, there is some degree of healing that occurs at every phase. How fast you go through it varies significantly for people. Sometimes their grieving process is very quick. Sometimes it goes on for years and years. The difference, I think, depends on how significant the loss was to the person, and how intensely they were impacted by it, and will affect how long they go through the process of grieving. If the loss is minor, you could go through all three stages of a grieving process in maybe a matter of minutes. But if the loss is major, then I think the process can quite literally take years. So let's talk about what these three steps are. The first one is shock or denial. And, you know, this is where you might have somebody just be in disbelief, denial, saying, you know, it isn't going to happen. You know, we've heard this before. We've heard it's going to be layoffs or forced retirements, and really just denying that it is going to happen, or even once it's happened, you know, still be in shock or denial that it's happened. This is kind of the body's way of numbing the pain of the loss. So, you know, it's kind of like the brain's way of giving the body a shot of anesthesia, so to speak, is to just kind of numb you from that sense of pain that you're experiencing. If your mind is denying the loss, then that's just its way of refusing to believe that it's actually happening. And you can only go, you know, so long in that denial, and then you're going to have to work your way through, you know, the actual occurrence, or, you know, the actual absence of your coworkers, and, you know, how you adjust your work patterns and things like that is not really, you know, part of the what this lesson is, because I'm sure as they lose their coworkers and less people on the job and less experience on the job, it's also going to impact, you know, their safety and their ability to perform their duty. So that adds to the confusion and the frustration and the anxiety. The second stage, once that numbness wears off, the second stage of the grieving process is where someone would become angry or depressed. And it's important that you go through this process of grieving as well. I mean, you have every right to be angry. You have every right to be frustrated and to be anxious and to be looking to see who's responsible for who caused this loss. It's natural to go through that process. You know, I guess what I would do is discourage you from trying to hold back feeling angry or feeling depressed. Now, I don't want you to stay in this state for a long period of time, but it is part of the three-step process of grieving and getting over that sense of loss. So you have to allow yourself the space and the time to allow that to occur. Don't deny that of yourself, because it's healthy to let that to a degree happen. And you're going to be angry at other people. You're going to be angry at coworkers. You might be angry at the chief, the elected officials. You might be frustrated or feeling guilty or angry at yourself that you could have done something differently. So some people turn that anger inward and blame themselves for what has happened. Others turn it outward and look for other people to blame. In the depression part of the grieving process, that'll occur, as you display sadness over the loss of your friends and coworkers and confidants and people that you looked up to and learned from. And you should feel sad, and you should feel pain. That is part of the natural occurrence of things. You know, you wouldn't have feelings for them if you weren't feeling, you know, that anger and that sadness and that pain. So that it's normal, and that's going to occur when the numbness of that first stage wears off, that denial stage. You're gonna have that happen. The final stage of the grieving process is where you start to understand the bigger picture of how things happen, why things happen, the reasoning behind it. You may still not like it, but you start to have some rational thoughts versus maybe being driven earlier in the stages more by emotions. This is when your rational side starts to kick in and you realize, okay, I can't change it. I'm going to have to learn to accept it. I'm going to have to learn to be able to continue to come to work, continue to do my job. I mean, alternatively, you can always leave your job if you're that distraught about it, but I'm not encouraging anyone to do that. I'd rather they find a way to cope and work through it than to give up something that they love to do. No, and they'll find new ways to enjoy what they do. And then that third stage, when you start to understand and accept it, then you also start to find creative ways to fill in the voids that were created by the loss of those friends. And assuming that those people still remain in the area, I mean, it's not like they've died or moved away necessarily. If they're still in the area, nothing says that you still can't maintain a relationship with them. Surely it'll be different than one that where you did it at work, but that doesn't mean that you can't still have that friendship and find a way to accept what has happened and to move on to a new chapter. You'll learn a lot about yourself as you go through this process and you do some self-reflection, and you realize that life is full of good things that happen and full of bad things that happen. And unfortunately, for most of us, oftentimes we're in control of the good things that happen, but far less often are we in control of the bad things that happen. And control is important in most people's lives. Most people like to have control and know what's going to happen and know that they played a role in helping to form their future and to help make their own happiness. And when you have something yanked out from underneath you, like what he's describing here, you're losing control. And you'll wonder, am I next? Or, what's the next chapter? If this thing that we thought could never happen has happened, then what's the next thing that can happen? And and that's going to lead to some anxiety and maybe even some mistrust of the city's administration or the fire department's administration. I think that the important thing, the lesson that I want to make sure that I get through to this person is that you have to let yourself go through this process of grieving. The part of the brain that controls your anger and controls your depression is also the same area that allows you to feel peace and solitude and love. And if you don't allow yourself to go through the grieving process and to heal from it, that part of your brain kind of gets stalled in that anger and depression mode of thinking, and it doesn't allow your brain to be able to move on and find that peace and that solitude and that love that comes from the same part of the brain, because it's kind of like the hard drive on the computer. It's just being consumed with the bad thoughts and the bad things, and there will be no time or space to allow those good things to come into your brain. So you have to work through the grieving process, but you need to get beyond it to allow that part of the brain to get back to thinking good thoughts and positive thoughts. Firefighters are a pretty macho group of people. I mean, we see the worst that life and humanity has to offer, and we see it all the time, and it's easy to become jaded and indifferent. But most of the time, those losses that we're seeing belong to somebody else. They're not ours to own. They're someone else's tragedy and someone else's death and someone else's losing their property, and far less often is it hitting home and being our own. So even though we see this and we put up our macho front and act as though these things don't bother us, it's a whole different realm when the tragedy is happening to you personally versus one where you can distance yourself from it because it's someone else's losses versus one that you own and that you're emotionally attached to. Firefighters struggling with this feeling of loss and depression might revert to the use of alcohol or drugs or other addicting type behavior. This is things that, coworkers should be watching for, because you don't always see yourself being destructive as it's happening. So if you're in a work environment where these things have happened, look out for each other, watch out for each other, look for these signs of destructive behavior, drug and alcohol abuse, other type addicting behaviors, maybe gambling to excess. These things will only complicate and compound your struggles to try to heal. It's not okay. It's essential that you let yourself feel the loss that you're going through when the coworkers are gone. To do otherwise is unnatural. I'd suggest that you find someone to talk to, someone to let your feelings out to, versus holding them in. That could be another coworker. It could be somebody completely outside the service that is just somebody that you can unload and shed those feelings to. And, it could be a good listener and give you some support. I think it's important that you learn to forgive those who are causing you to feel that anger and that frustration from your loss. It's easy in this down economy when things like this happen to blame the city administration, the county administration, the fire chief, where in reality, a lot of these things are happening for reasons that are outside of their control too, with the downturn in the economy, and all things being equal, there probably isn't anybody who'd want to see somebody, laid off or put out of their job, but it's happening. So, learn to forgive those who are that you feel are responsible for that loss, and that'll help in your healing too. I think you should engage in some self-help techniques. There are plenty of books in the library that you could check out, or at a bookstore that you could purchase that would help you through, self-help techniques for how to cope with the process of grieving and the stress and anxiety of loss. If you find yourself hung up, if you just cannot get over it or through it, I think you should seek some professional help, because there are people who do get hung up in the steps of the grieving process and they can't figure out how to get beyond and through it. If that happens, talk to a counselor, go through your employee assistance program or your health insurance provider or maybe your city or county board of mental health, and get some help. I mean, it's a traumatic thing to go through, but you don't want to have yourself be destroyed in the process. There are people who depend on you, and you mean a lot to somebody, and when you're out of balance like that, it can affect your relationships with others too. So they have to work at trying to go through this process of grieving and get back to healthy because of the obligations you have to both your organization and to others that mean a lot to you. You may always miss those relationships that you've developed, but I think in the end, life will and should go on, and you'll find new people to associate with, and you'll find new ways to enjoy your work, and you'll find new ways to enjoy your relationships with those coworkers. And my last piece of advice to this person and to others is just be patient with yourself. Don't get in the way of yourself. In other words, allow yourself to go through the process and to do all the steps of grieving and set your macho persona aside, and when it's getting the best of you, get some help. So that's my advice to this firefighter and to those who are out there who are experiencing the loss of coworkers, and I know there are plenty.
Well, Rich, it's very timely, not just to the fire service, but I don't know anybody who does not know anybody that's been laid off or furloughed or, you know, any sort of loss of their job. So that can really help out a lot of folks these days. So thank you. Again, if you do have any questions, please send us an email to podcast@firehouse.com, and we'll be right back after this break.
Radio at firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters.
Welcome back to the Leader's Toolbox on Radio at firehouse.com with your host, Dr. Richard Gassaway. Rich, can you tell us a little bit more about your plans for Firehouse Expo coming up later in July?
Yeah. On Thursday, I'm going to be moderating a podcast for the Volunteer and Combination Officers section of the International Association of Fire Chiefs. We're going to be doing that at noon on Thursday in room 313. If you want to stop by and see a live recording of a podcast of fire service leaders talking about current issues, we'll be taking some questions from the audience. If you have some questions that you would like to see addressed by the panel, you can participate that way, or you can just observe the recording of the live podcast, sure to have some good information shared with fire service leaders based on the panel that will be assembled. I'm going to be giving a presentation on understanding and improving motivation, talking about how leaders are challenged by understanding what motivation is and how their employees are motivated or not motivated. And we're going to talk about what creates motivation or dismotivation and how to improve the motivation of employees. This program is pretty lively, interactive, and somewhat humorous, as we maybe poke a little fun at some of the challenges of having motivated employees. Then I'm going to be giving a program that's more serious in nature, related to firefighter safety, and that program is entitled "Does Someone Have to Die Before Things Will Change?" And this program is going to look at the lessons from commercial aviation that has spent millions of dollars in understanding why things go wrong when passengers die in airplanes, and some of the lessons that have come out of aviation that would be good lessons for the fire service are going to be things that we're going to be discussing as to how we, the fire service, could benefit from the safety practices of aviation. So two good programs that I'm looking forward to at Expo.
All right. Then we can also find you along with several other Firehouse magazine and .com contributors, some of the podcast hosts. We'll also be doing, I guess we can call it an appearance and the opportunity to have a one-on-one chat. So that'll be hosted at the Firehouse Expo booth right when you walk in. And if you attend the expo, you can find the times for all the different speakers, all 3 days in the expo program. So if you are in Baltimore, take a look and stop by and say hello. It's a great opportunity to have some one-on-one and maybe get a little face-to-face advice from those in attendance. So
I especially enjoy talking with people at conferences who are the loyal listeners of the Leader's Toolbox. I get a lot of people coming up and saying, love the Leader's Toolbox, spot on with your advice, and we appreciate it, and I really like it. And then it usually transcends into, and while I have you here, let me tell you about a problem we're having, and that's okay, because that's what I really enjoy, is that kind of interaction with leaders and future leaders.
All right, well, we'll keep everyone updated based on when the journal program comes out at the time. So let's hit the second question here. Again, if you do have any questions for the show, send us an email to podcast@firehouse.com. I've reached the second question. I'm a recently promoted officer, and I'm a little bit scared because I'm not sure if I'm ready to do this. I feel as though I have the technical competency, but when it comes to actually being a leader, I'm not sure I have the skill set developed. What advice can you offer me?
As I was pondering this question, I started to take notes and write a list of the things that I would want to say to this listener, and I realized I had much, much more to say than what we could ever fit into the time frame of a podcast. So I tried to boil that down into a few morsels of advice that I think, if this person focused on these things, that they would be on their way to being successful. First off, it's absolutely natural to feel scared when you get promoted, because you're doing new things and you're responsible for things that you previously weren't responsible for, and you went from being, you know, a line firefighter to now being the one who's going to make decisions that can impact other people. So I think it's okay to feel a little unnerved about that. In fact, I think it's healthy. If you weren't a little bit nervous about it and a little bit frightened by it, then I'd be worried that maybe you're not taking it serious enough. So those butterflies in your gut are probably healthy, because they'll help you stay alert and pay attention to the things that are most important about doing your job. So this person says he has the technical competencies, so I won't talk a whole lot about the technical competencies of being a good fire officer. But I do have a series of small snippets of advice that I think I would offer to him. One is, develop your expertise. Be an expert in your field. And he says he has some developed competencies, but the reason I put this one up number one is, don't rest on your laurels. Don't assume that because you have developed those technical competencies that's where it ends. Continue to develop, continue to learn, continue to grow. You know what you have to do the job right and do the job safely and do the job efficiently. But those things, though, that's a moving target. Those things are always changing and always developing. You know, I think back to when I first learned how to do auto extrication. Hybrid vehicle, the concept wasn't even invented. You know, and now, you know, these new vehicles that are coming out, they all have their unique features and nuances that you have to be careful about how you conduct auto extrication with these new vehicles. So I'll just let that serve as just one really brief example, that the things that you know today that are going to keep your firefighters safe are continually moving, and they're going to be looking to you, the officer, to be the one who's the go-to person who knows the right thing to do and when and how to do it. The people that follow you will have that expectation. They'll also expect that you know how to solve the complex problems that are going to arise, whether that's on the fire ground or whether it's in the station. They're going to expect you to be the one who knows how to solve that. And that's going to be a little unnerving for you at first, until you develop that skill set. But don't be afraid to ask other people for help, to have them give you advice about how to do it. Well, one of the worst things you can do is fake your expertise. You know, you can fool somebody for about 15 minutes, and after that, you'd better know something. So don't try to fake your expertise. When you don't know it, admit you don't know it, then, you know, you're at risk of somebody ridiculing you because you don't know it, but that's a lot safer than acting like you know how to do something that you don't know how to do, and in a result, getting somebody hurt or making a bad situation worse. You definitely want to be the go-to person for the things that are happening on your shift and on the job. To do that, you have to stay abreast all the changes that are occurring in the industry and stay up and well-read on not only the fire service journals and websites, but also things related to leadership, because you're now in a position where you're going to be leading people, and you're going to be in a position to lead people more than you are going to probably be in a position to be a good technical competent firefighter. In other words, you're going to spend more of your time putting out fires in the firehouse than you are putting out fires out on the street, and you'll find that your life is going to be a lot smoother, and your work's going to be a lot more enjoyable when you develop that good skill set. So the goal here is to become incrementally smarter every day. In other words, I can't tell you one book to read that says this is going to be the book that's going to make you a great leader. There's a whole bunch of them. Or, you know, one speaker to listen to, there's a whole bunch of them. You have to just continually and incrementally become smarter every day. And when you do, share that wisdom with those that you supervise. The smarter you can make the people around you about leadership, the easier it becomes for you to be a good leader as well. Second, become an innovator. You should always strive to find a new and better way to do things. This will keep you sharp, and it'll keep those who are working with you sharp as you try to find innovative ways to do your job and to bring new ideas to the front. Challenge the people who work for you to come up with new ways of doing things, and encourage them to be creative thinkers and be creative problem solvers, and not just be the one who gives them the answer, but be the one who challenges them to come up with their own answers. Invent something, create something, contribute something to the greater fire service as a vocation. You know, find something that you're good at and write an article for a journal or a website that helps others learn from your innovative ideas. So, you know, be an innovator and then give that back. Third, as a supervisor, I would encourage this person to be predictable. Everyone wants to work for a predictable and dependable boss. Boy, if you've ever worked for a boss who isn't, you know that this can be a miserable existence. You come to work one day, the boss is happy. You come to work the next day, the boss isn't happy. You come to work one day, the boss is very communicative. You come to work the next day, the boss isn't saying a word to you. I think that employees really get uptight when the boss is not predictable. So I would say be a predictable boss.
A predictable boss is someone whose behavior is even-keeled regardless of the crisis that's happening around him or her. You know, and that's what we as workers want to see in our boss. We don't want to see a boss who can be shaken and flabbed by crisis or problems that arise. We want to be able to look at our boss and know that they're calm and they're collected and that they're not going to be shaken when things happen, because in this business things are going to happen, and as employees we want our bosses to be able to remain calm and to keep us calm and see us through the challenge. Fourth, I think that my advice to this leader is to be completely committed. As a supervisor, when you transition from a firefighter to a supervisor, your level of commitment gets ramped up. You know, as a firefighter, you can come to work, do your shift, go home. You don't have to worry about things that happen while you're away, and come back and do your job again the next shift. When you're a supervisor, I think you're more invested in the department and more invested in the things that are going on, whether it's on your workday or it's not on your workday, because the things transcend across shifts. And I think that when you get promoted to be a supervisor, you have to be more committed, more dedicated to being a supporter of the organization's direction and being more concerned about the things that are happening in the organization all the time, not just while you're there. Related to this commitment as a supervisor, when things aren't going your way, I think you have an obligation to work constructively to change them, but not to undermine the organization. And I know that at a firefighter level, you can be removed from decision making and be unhappy and be a complainer. But as you get promoted to be a supervisor, you can't be unhappy and be a complainer. You have to be constructive and proactive and try to help to bring change to the organization and not undermine the direction of the organization. Remember that when you're a supervisor, your subordinates are watching and they're imitating your behavior. So if you're committed, they're more likely to be committed because they see the behavior that you're displaying and then they imitate that behavior. So if they see you not being committed, then chances are they're not going to be committed. So realize that that they're watching and they're more likely to imitate what they see you do. Fifth, set high expectations for those who are working for you. And as you set those high expectations, communicate those to them, and then also teach them how to achieve your expectations. It's not enough simply to say, here's what I want you to do, and think that everyone is going to be able to use common sense and figure it out as to how to do it in a way that's going to make you happy or accomplish what you want to have accomplished. So you might have to teach and actually demonstrate what the performance that meets the expectations looks like. And then hold people accountable for their results. And that is sometimes hard for supervisors to do, is to go back to when people are not performing up to their expectations and say, look, you fell short of my expectations. Let's go through the process here again where I'll show you what my expectations are and demonstrate for you how it is that you accomplish that, and realize that's a process that you're teaching people how to meet your expectations. Six, take care of your people. Well, if you take care of your people, they're going to take care of you. Treat them with respect, treat them with compassion, and they will do the same. That respect and that passion is a two-way street. And as a supervisor, you should be the first to give it. Don't expect it. Don't demand it. Give it. Give it continually. Even if they don't give it back, continue to do so, and you'll find that firefighters will respect you more and show more compassion toward you as a supervisor and be more forgiving of your shortcomings as you are respectful and compassionate of them and forgiving of their shortcomings. Next, don't be selfish. When you're in a position of leadership as a supervisor, you have to put the duty to the department ahead of your own selfish wants and needs. And now that's sometimes hard to do because we all have very strong feelings about the things that we think are owed to us or that we should be entitled to. And as a supervisor, you have to get beyond putting those selfish needs first and put the needs of the department ahead of that. If you make everything about you, then expect that the people who are following you are going to do the same thing, and they're going to be selfish and make everything about them. So realize that they're paying attention. Next is lead by example. Get out in front of the group and be willing to show the way, lead the way, blaze the trail, show them how to do what you want to have done. Don't be above doing anything that you ask them to do, and be willing to get as down and dirty as you're asking them to do. And when they see that you're willing to do that, then they're more willing to do it too, because they know that you're not asking them to do more than what you're willing to do yourself. Also, when you do this, your employees learn from you. When they see you doing it, they're learning the behavior of how to do it. So when you're doing it, don't take any shortcuts. Do it right, do it thorough, because you're setting the example for them on how to do the job right. don't assume that they know how to do it as a result of common sense, because common sense really isn't as common as we would like it to be. So those demonstrations of leading by example and demonstrating the proper way to do things goes a long way to helping your subordinates develop good work habits. Ninth, trust your people. If you give trust, you get trust. If you don't trust your people, they're not going to trust you. If you spend your time auditing your people and trying to find them and catch them doing something wrong, you'll succeed. No employee is perfect. Everyone is going to make mistakes. Everyone is going to have shortcomings. Everyone is going to have challenges at work. And if you're the kind of boss that is looking for that, you'll find it, because it exists in every workplace. But by doing so, you absolutely destroy any trust your employees have, and that trust is so essential to making an organization run. And it's so hard to build up and so easy to tear down. And if you're not trusting of your people, they're not going to be trusting of you, and they're going to be too gun shy to do things because they're fearful of the consequences that you bring because you don't show and display trust. Instead, try to find your people doing things right and praise them and reward them. Along the way, they're bound to make mistakes, and their shortcomings are bound to show. When you see that happen, try to avoid discipline and use it as an opportunity to teach and to coach them versus to whack them with discipline. Let them know that you value them, and one of the ways to let them know you value them is to be a teacher and a coach, not a disciplinarian. And if you do that, you'll help to keep that trust strong and avoid having them being shaken up because they don't trust you. Working for a boss who doesn't display trust makes for a very, very fragile relationship, and one that's not likely to survive. Something's going to give. Someone's going to go. There's going to be some consequence there as a result of that failure to establish and maintain a strong trust relationship. 10, and finally, learn to take some calculated risks as a supervisor. Now, I don't mean risks on the fire ground. I mean administrative risks to try to make the organization better. Trying new and innovative things, some of the things we talked about previously. When your staff sees you taking risks to try to do new things that are innovative, and they see you making mistakes, and they see you falling down, and see you picking yourself up, and seeing that there's no great consequence, that breeds an environment for success. That breeds an environment where they'll be willing to try to take those administrative risks to make the organization better as well. And they need you to set an example and show them what it means to take a risk and what success looks like and what failure looks like and what and how to pick yourself up and brush yourself off and get back in the game when you have a failure. And your employees need to see that you're not a perfect boss, you're a fallible boss as well, and that you can make mistakes too. When they see you as human and a person who is able of making mistakes and recovering from them, then I think that builds a respect for that person and a respect for that position. Finally, coincidentally, related to this list here, I had recently read the results of a survey talking about why employees leave companies. And the survey talked about a variety of reasons, but in the end, what the lesson was in the end is that employees don't quit companies. Employees quit their bosses because their bosses are so bad that they just cannot bear to stay and work for their bosses any longer. So they don't really quit the companies. In other words, you have a company that has great pay and great benefits and great incentives and be an innovative company, but in the end, the employee who isn't happy will be an employee who's leaving because of a supervisor. And That information comes from a book that I read recently and a video or audio tape that I had listened to from a book called First Break All the Rules. And the book is a little bit older, but it's from a couple of authors who took information from Gallup polls of 80,000 managers who said, you know, what is your essence of good management and leadership? And I won't get too much into the details of the book, but one of the things that gleaned out of that book is unhappy employees quit because of their bosses, not because of the work environment, or not because of the pay and the benefits and things like that. Lastly, I'd say don't be the boss that nobody wants to work for. It'll make everybody miserable and their existence in the organization miserable, including your own. You don't have to overextend yourself to try to be the most popular boss, but stay true to those 10 things that I had suggested on the list, and I think that'll be helping you to get well on your way.
Okay, Rich, well, thank you again for the advice for the two podcast listeners this month. And for the folks listening, make sure you check out the podcast player page, and that's at radio.firehouse.com. You can find all the links that we discussed earlier, including Rich's site, Firehouse Expo information, and more. And if you do have any questions for an upcoming show, please send us an email to podcast@firehouse.com.
One thing I wanted to say in closing, Pete, that I forgot to mention on the break was I have launched a new blog. Through my website. It's a blog that I call Wappy Jawed. It's after a friend of mine who coined that phrase and some years ago, and I always found amusement in that. And Wappy Jaw just means something that's out of balance or out of kilter. And what I am using that blog to do is talk about some of the musings that I observe in life and leadership. And so if you want to access that, you can get through that through my homepage at richgassway.com. And also I'm on Twitter now, coming into the 21st century technology. So if you're interested in following me on Twitter, you can sign up for that on my homepage as well.
All right, sounds good. So we'll put a link to richgassway.com on the podcast player page as well. So, Rich, thank you very much. We'll see you in a few weeks in Baltimore, and we'll get the next show underway. So if you do have any questions, send us an email. Again, the email address is podcast@firehouse.com.
Okay, thanks, Pete. Thanks to the listeners.
If you have a comment on this program, drop us a line at radio@firehouse.com. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned to firehouse.com for more broadcasts like these. Or visit our website at www.firehouse.com/radio.